And welcome, listeners and the listened to. This is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. So, Avi, I have a question for you.
Hit me. Ask me anything. Okay. No holds barred.
No holds barred. So, have you ever said something on the phone or just in conversation among friends, like, I need a winter coat? And then hours later, you're on Facebook or Instagram and you see ads for coats.
Has that ever happened
to
me?
Yeah, has that ever happened to you? And maybe it's not coats. Maybe it's something else.
Maybe. Yeah. I feel like yes, but I can't give you a specific.
Well, that has happened to me multiple times. And I always thought to myself.
Was it a coat?
It wasn't. It would be clothes, sweaters, or shoes or something like that.
So you talk about clothes a lot.
Yeah. Maybe. Sometimes.
But was it always clothes? That's what I'm asking.
It could be different things, like Italian beer, something I don't typically drink. But then I would see something for a beer club. Which, I'm not a beer drinker, but then I would see.
Was it a Peroni?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But somebody was telling me about it, and I would get ads for a beer club or something like that.
Weird.
And that was weird. And I thought, oh my goodness, is my phone listening to me? And the answer, yes.
You're sure about that?
Pretty. I mean, well, people feel that way, that
sure,
their data
sure.
is being collected, that, somebody's watching, surveilling their moves. And I could have made a search for it. I don't remember, but I've had that feeling that the phone is listening. And so our question today is, do you think big tech has gone too far in collecting your data? The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on our YouTube stream, you can leave your comment or question in the chat because we have an expert coming up today, Joe Turow. He's an author and a major expert on the issue of privacy in the digital age. And let me tell you, in researching for today's show, it blew my mind, all the types of information that is being collected about us, just going about our regular lives. So we want to hear from you. Again, the question is, do you think big tech has gone too far in collecting your data? 888-477-9499.
AGB on YouTube says, yesterday my wife did the Hey Google to my phone and our Google Home device on the other side of the house responded.
Yeah, ooh. That's happened to me too. So,
by the way, I have like Alexas. Dog ears, yeah.
I have a lot of Alexas in the house.
Yeah, maybe to the too other many
half,
Alexas.
Thanks to the other half. And I'm just like, I'm very nervous at home.
So. Also, send us your favorite Italian beer, studio2@whyy.org. First, a trio of local news stories, and this is a local story with national implications.
Yeah.
So you might have heard attorneys general from 22 states are suing to block the Trump executive order that would deny citizenship, we think, to people born in this country to parents who are undocumented or here on a temporary basis. The 22 attorneys general include the AGs from New Jersey, Delaware, and Maryland, crucially, not Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey Attorney General Matt Plackin spoke about the lawsuit at a press conference yesterday. Let's take a listen to what he had to say about President Trump's executive order.
This is an extreme and unprecedented act, and this executive order is an assault on the rule of law. Presidents in this country have broad powers, but they are not kings.
So many people feel this would be a violation of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which reads in part, Cherry, all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. The Trump administration argues that that clause, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, is the wiggle room they can exploit to issue this executive order. We thought this was coming. It's here. New Jersey, Delaware, and Maryland, part of the lawsuit.
Yeah, so interesting because if people remember the 14th Amendment became law in 1866 to give full citizenship rights to formerly enslaved African Americans because this is post emancipation. And it has been believed that if you were born in this country, automatically you become a citizen. And I mean, I took con law in law school, never heard of this argument.
Right.
With this section of the 14th Amendment. So it's going to be interesting. I was not surprised that the lawsuits came because this is something that I think attracts people to this country. And it's not very common among countries generally to grant that type of birthright
citizenship. Only about 30 countries around the world
do
this sort of birthright citizenship. It's there's this Latin term, and I won't butcher it, but you know, like you said, it's not super common. Yeah. It is something that has distinguished the U.S. Now, story number two.
Yes.
Speaking of things that may be unconstitutional.
Yes. Well, Philadelphia launched today neighborhood wellness courts in the Kensington section of the city, and it's part of the Parker administration's efforts to deal with the realities of the opioid crisis that is in full force in that community. And Mayor Sherelle Parker created these wellness courts through an executive order that she signed on Tuesday. And this is how it works. If someone is arrested, they'll be issued a summary citation, offered addiction treatment and diversionary services before a judge on the very same day of their arrest. To begin, these wellness courts will only be held on Wednesday, and Philadelphia police are apparently supposed to do these sweeps on Wednesdays to kind of bring people in. And this new initiative would mean that people who are arrested are brought into a triage center. They're evaluated. They can get medical help, withdrawal care, and if they're stable enough, would go before a judge. But critics are already jumping on this. They're saying that, you know, this is only in Kensington, so it means that the diversions and other treatments would only be available to people who were arrested in that neighborhood, which means someone from another neighborhood who's having similar issues would get treated differently. So,
yeah.
And they're saying there could be also some due process issues because you're getting a hearing the very same day. There might not be
That's
an
what I was going to ask you.
Yeah,
doesn't the Constitution protect you? Whatever the crime is, whatever the evidence against you, you would have you would go before a judge that same day.
You would have, and they would assign you a public defender if you need one, but you won't have very much time to collect evidence or to fight this.
Right.
And so some people are criticizing this. Again, today is the first day. We'll see if there's going to be lawsuits about this.
All right. Third story.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, no lawsuits in this story.
Okay.
Unless someone falls through the ice. You mentioned yesterday that it's really cold outside, mm-hmm. Jerry.
It is.
So if you hadn't heard that yet, it's cold outside.
It's cold outside.
People have noted that the Schuylkill River is starting to freeze mm-hmm. over a little bit because it's so cold. That led us to a story by Axios, which led us to a story by Hidden City from 2014, all about the history of skating in
Philadelphia. I know you love this.
And it was such a good story. We just have to read some of the highlights. So the Schuylkill and the Delaware used to freeze pretty regularly, and people would skate on the river. Now, they say don't skate on the river now, but if you mm-hmm. want to see what this looked like back in 1856, here is an image of people skating on the Delaware River in 1856. Can we get an oil painting? Look at that beauty.
It looks so nice.
It's a whole scene down there.
There's ships in the background.
According to this Hidden City article, if the freeze was thick enough, there'd be vendors out there selling stuff.
Wow.
Sometimes they would roast an ox.
You going to cook something on the ice?
That's wild. Never even heard of anyone. I didn't even know you could roast ox that way.
I haven't even had an ox. So
yeah,
there
I've
you
had
go.
Ox tail, but no ox.
Yeah, I haven't even.
So apparently this used to be somewhat common. The rivers eventually became pretty polluted, so that wasn't as good an idea anymore. But people continued to skate on local ponds and lakes. There was a popular skating pond in Northern Liberties. Not too far from where you're mm-hmm. at now. And then there was a man-made lake in Fairmount Park called Gustine Lake. We have a picture of some people there. Look at those people having a fun time on Gustine Lake. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. The Kelly family used to skate there, like Grace Kelly.
Wow.
You know, her whole family, the Jack Kelly, et cetera. That lake no longer exists. But more recently, did you know? I did not know this. And it wasn't that long ago. There used to be a sunken skating rink in Center City, just a couple blocks. Look at that. From City Hall. Look at that.
Wow.
Look at that sunken skating. It's where the Penn Center office complex is today. And it was kind of like Philly's version of – what does that look like to you? Does that remind you of anything, that image?
Not
a different famous skating rink?
Not really. And, you know, I'm not a big ice skater, so go ahead and tell me.
Rockefeller Center.
Yes.
In New York City.
Yes, yes.
So that's the same idea,
mm-hmm.
right? And they tried to do a version of that here in Philadelphia.
That's beautiful.
Long and short of it, according to this Hidden City article,
mm-hmm.
didn't work. People didn't go for Philly's Rockefeller Center skating rink. It wasn't very popular. And the sunlight didn't really like filter through. So mm-hmm.
it was
kind of
dark. And probably really, really cold.
Probably really cold. So it didn't last. It started in the late 50s, and I think by the late 70s, it was gone. And now they have the one at Dilworth Plaza right outside City Hall.
Yeah, Winterfest.
So sort of similar.
Yeah, and we also have the River Rink.
The River Rink.
Yeah, the Winterfest River Rink.
Right, is that Penn's Landing?
Yeah, that's the Penn's Landing
area. I haven't been there in years.
I know. I mean, that's basically all we have. And, you know, even if the Schuylkill were to freeze now, I wouldn't risk it, even if, you know.
Please don't.
I would not risk it.
Please. This whole segment should come with a disclaimer. Don't. No, please. Yes, it is frozen right now.
Do not do it.
Do not go skating. And when it's flooded, don't go diving like that guy did.
I remember that.
Just don't. That's the Studio 2 health tip of the day. Coming up next, do you think big tech has gone too far in collecting your data? Give us a call. 888-477-9499. If you're on the YouTube, drop a comment in the live chat. We're talking about tech and privacy on Studio 2 coming up. Stick with us.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Afi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Most of us rely on technology every day. Avi, we've been on our laptops and phones since early this morning. Lots of people wear smartwatches or they have smart TVs at home. And about half of Americans use voice assistants like Amazon Alexa. I know I do. They have Google Home. They have Siri. And they're convenient. And they can even be fun. But this tech that's now embedded in our lives comes with a serious cost.
Apple recently agreed to settle a lawsuit over claims that Siri recorded people's private conversations. That got us thinking, are our phones listening to us? Now, it's no secret that tech companies use and sell our personal data, but the amount of data harvested is astonishing, and the detailed information they have is far more intimate than basic demographics.
Yeah. To figure your browsing habits, likes and dislikes are being tracked. And the rise in AI means digital marketers, guess what? They can now predict your future behavior. Your phone might know you better than you know yourself.
So to figure out just how little privacy we have on the internet and the surprising ways our data is used, we've invited Joseph Turo to join us in our Philadelphia studio. He is the Robert Louis Cheyenne Professor of Media Systems and Industries at the Annenberg School at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also the author of many, many books on data privacy. Most recently, The Voice Catchers, How Marketers Listen In to Exploit Your Feelings, Your Privacy, and Your Wallet. Joe Turo, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. You said it all. We can go home.
We had a lot to talk about
today. Nothing more to add?
Yeah. Well, I could try.
We could talk about roasting an ox for the rest of the
day. That I couldn't do.
Okay. We'll stick to data privacy. Yeah.
And by the way, our question for you today at home, listening and watching on YouTube, do you think big tech has gone too far in collecting your data? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on WHYY's YouTube page, drop your comments in the live chat. And we wanted to kind of start the conversation, Joe, by setting the stage. Can you tell us some of the most surprising or concerning ways that companies surveil and collect data on us?
I'll tell you what most people don't know. Mm-hmm. The ones I talk to anyway. Most people have no clue that their television is watching them.
Your television?
Okay. Television.
How's my television watching me?
Do you have a smart TV?
No, I don't, but let's just imagine I do for the sake of this example.
Anybody with like a Samsung or an LG or some of the lesser cost ones, the TV watches your behavior. Mm. And then sells those data or shares those data or uses those data for commercials, depending on what you're watching, to slot commercials in real time based upon what they know about you. Not only that, there are ways to analyze the content of the show you're watching and to somehow make assumptions about how the content of the show will influence you and make commercials, slot commercials in that reflect that content and your relationship
to it. So customized, basically.
We're talking increasingly about personalization. That's the name of the game.
Wait, rewind for a second. So my TV shows me something that's going to make me feel very somber, and it knows that, and it tailors the next ad to appeal to someone who's in a very somber
companies
mood.
Are doing that, yes. There are attempts at this. This is, as we speak, companies are doing this.
So your TV, when you say your TV is watching you.
I was using that in
you're using that in sort of the metaphorical way.
Right.
So it's not that the camera is looking at me.
No.
It's that it is monitoring what I'm watching.
Yes.
And analyzing how I might
and
react
to that. And taking
data
about you and making up data about you through different kinds of AI that we can discuss. And most people have no clue. For example, I had a TV put in our apartment, and the Best Buy people came in and, you know, they put it on a brace and everything. And they're just running through. I'm in a different room and they're going through the various settings. And I hear one of them say, okay, just hit okay.
Right.
So I walk in there and I say, hey, look, I'm a media professor. I have to figure this out.
Yeah.
So I start reading tell me what's there. So I started reading it and it was too much. And I realized these guys have a life, you know, they have to leave and do something else.
Yeah.
So it said there was a button that said later. And I didn't know what would happen if I hit later, but I hit it anyway. And then I tried to start reading the terms and conditions. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm. It's like you have a choice, but do you really have a choice?
Well, we can get into that.
Yeah.
So I went online, and I think it was 27,000 words.
Wow.
And then once I got through that, I realized to really figure it out, I had to read some other aspect of the privacy policy. So, and then I'd had to figure out, and, you know, I'm not that dumb, but I'm not the swiftest guy in the world. But I had to figure out where to go to tell them not to track me.
Yeah.
And it was five steps.
Yeah.
Not intuitive.
Yeah.
Into the TV set to tick that place.
And you just want to watch TV. So
I just
want
to
watch most
people
an just
OLED television set.
Yeah
most
that's
people
just one just, device.
Yes.
That's just one device.
And I said to the guys as they were leaving, am I the only one who does this? And they say, yeah, most people, they don't care. They just want to hurry up. Yeah.
I want to bring in a caller. We have Trey from Wilmington, Delaware on the line. Trey, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, Terry. I just wanted to comment on, I guess, examples of when that has happened to me. I know they share our information. That's, you know, a normal thing at this point. But so the first one is I went to a movie about a year ago, Ford versus Ferrari. Anyways, a couple of days later on Instagram, I'm scrolling. There's movie tickets for it. It doesn't know that I've already seen it, but it knows that I was maybe through my, you know, card payment. There's another one where I'm like buying car parts and then I'll go on a different website and there's that same recommendation for that part.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, that happens all. That's probably the most common form of advertising.
Thank you,
in
Trey,
the digital
by the
environment.
Way.
Yeah. You're right. That was Trey Brin. Très bien. The most common form of advertising is basically what's called remarketing or retargeting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They look at what you're doing and then they try. A lot of times, as you're pointing out, they don't know that you've actually bought it. None of this stuff is perfect by any means.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you a question because when we started the show, one of the things I talked about was I could be having a conversation about something like Italian beer, right? Mm. And I don't drink beer and I know I didn't search for it. But then I go to my, you know, Facebook, I'm getting, or Instagram, there's like beer memberships that they're selling to me. And it's not something that I typically do. And so the question is your phone listening?
Yeah,
I
get this all the time.
What's really happening?
The answer that I have to give you from everything I have heard is that it's not, okay? It's illegal. However, I have had examples of exactly the same thing. I was talking about hair gel.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember why. Oh, I know. I went to a hair guy, and he mentioned to me that maybe it'd be a good idea to put hair gel on myself. So I came home and I talked to my wife about this. 2 days later, I start getting ads on my Alexa device that we talked in the kitchen for hair gel.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, this is crazy. Because I'm telling everybody this doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote to the company that advertises this. And I then spoke to somebody there and I said, look, this is the situation. This is what happened. Do you guys get ads based upon what people are talking about? And the only answer he gave me is, all we do is buy ads, sir. We don't know anything about this. And I know that people from Alexa are not going to get back to me.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to get information about this.
Yeah, so maybe that, let's broaden this a little bit. How do we know what we think we know about what these devices are doing? Because there's a big separation between what a device could do to surveil you mm-hmm. and what it actually is doing. And I don't know yeah. how much transparency there is between those two things. So how do you begin to answer that question of what, how we know what we think we know about what these devices are doing?
The only thing I can tell you is if companies were really doing this, somebody would have talked about it by now. Even in the case
of this being the listening to
the listening on a regular basis, it happened sometime by accident. That's what Siri supposedly did with some of the things that people said. I kind of believe Apple when they say they don't systematically use people's data, though they were not telling people that human beings were using the data to try to see if it fits their artificial intelligence purposes and other things like that. But in general, I kind of believe that when you say something in Siri or even Alexa, they use the data, mm-hmm. but they don't do it when you're not talking to it.
Right. And they're not snooping.
No.
It's only when you interact directly. Here's something from YouTube I was wanted just to mm-hmm. to further on that point. This is from Beans47. I constantly get ads for the business I work at despite not using their services. Makes me wonder how location data could be used to track even more personal visits, mm-hmm. especially pertaining to women's health. So
exactly.
Is data location used?
Absolutely. Data location is probably the most serious violation of a person's privacy that mm-hmm. I can think of, because people really have no clue unless you really look. Now, more and more Apple is asking the apps to say, do you want to share it with third parties, third-party data? Companies will say, you've probably been online and in other places will say, can we know your location? Often companies that don't even need your location. And the reason they do that is because they sell your location. There are companies that are in the business of finding out where you are, and then there's an exchange. It's called programmatic advertising, mm-hmm. where actually a person's location becomes part of the data set that they sell mm-hmm. about you. So yeah. location's a very important aspect of what people do.
And I know a lot of apps will ask you, you know, with the Apple, the iPhone, they're like, do you want to share your location only when you're using the app
yes.
all the time or never? And you have to, so every single app, they're using your location. So location is one aspect mm-hmm. of the data that these companies collect.
Yes.
What are some of the other aspects? Because I even read that they can, you're walking in a grocery store, people can, you know, track the tone of your voice, what aisles you were in. It's so much
well,
different data.
Tone
sets.
Is important sometimes,
yeah.
but what... stores increasingly are tracking people in a variety of ways. There are things called Bluetooth devices that are in particular locations in the store that bounce off of your phone. And that tells the store where you are and who you are in terms of an ID. And based upon your previous purchases and your location, they might give you certain discounts that another person wouldn't get. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if they know that you've bought a whole lot of stuff related to baby foods and you're going to buy diapers, maybe Huggies will not want you to buy Pampers that day, and they'll give you a coupon for one or the other thing like that. So going through the aisles, where you are in the aisles, that's become a normal thing in many stores. They use Bluetooth devices. They even use lights now, the lights that go into your camera. So if you've shut Bluetooth off, they can track you that way.
Okay, so they know location they use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The information in your text messages, yes or no? Just maybe real quick, yes or
yeah,
no?
Yeah, I don't think that it
okay.
depends.
Your
yeah.
emails, what you write in emails?
There's some, it used to be for sure. Now Google says that it doesn't do this on a regular basis.
What you're browsing on the web, like what
yes,
tabs you have
absolutely.
Open. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What you like or don't like as you're scrolling Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's used.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else? Like, what are the other big categories of things
well,
that they're definitely using?
Increasingly, it's not just individual variables. It's packages of ideas of who you are that the artificial intelligence will put together and make decisions about you that may have nothing to do with how you think about yourself.
And give an example.
Okay. The New York Times, for example, has something called Brand Match. Mm-hmm. And let's say you are interested, a movie company like Paramount has a new movie coming out, and it's a horror film. And so they want to reach people who are interested in horror films. In some sense, they could try to find out people who've looked for articles about horror films. But there are also people who might be interested in horror films, but they don't know that those are people who've read articles about horror films.
Like there's no direct forensic trace of that.
Yes. So they will try to find articles of people who have watched horror, who are interested in horror films, but read other things. Mm-hmm. And then they will try to see other people who read those things. And the AI will bring them together and try to come up with some kind of variable that describes who these people are that they can reach.
So okay. Like people who like horror films have a common trait.
Yeah, and they read these sorts of news articles.
Right.
And we don't even know why that predicts it, but the artificial intelligence says that it predicts it.
And we're going to have to talk about this AI. By the way, a question for you today, listeners, is do you think big tech has gone too far in collecting your data? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, please drop your comments.
Another thing that happens
yeah.
is with email, that's probably increasingly important. Companies have been figuring out that they can rotate the subject matter and the internal pictures and text of the emails based upon hundreds of variables that they have about you.
And you also get, I know in my Google email, you get ads in your email. So I'm assuming they must be, and it's usually things that you subscribe to or get emails about. So that's very interesting. I want to ask you too about Alexa, because I have Alexas in the house. And they have this creepy light that comes on right. even when you're not talking to the Alexa, mm-hmm. right? And I know somebody's smart speaker probably is going off, Alexa, Alexa, sorry, guys.
I know. That's happening, I'm sure.
It's happening right now. So what are they listening to? What are they not listening to? And because it has to kind of listen
to
prompt it.
It starts with the wake word,
yeah.
whatever wake word you choose. And then once you use the wake word, they will... look at what you're saying, but they say that the only thing they really capture and keep is when you buy something from them.
Mm.
So if you say, I would like to buy peanut butter and have it delivered, they will capture that and keep it because they say that's sort of like you're going online and using it. So they'll know that based on that. That's the kind of thing they say they capture. Now, they do know your voice compared to your spouse's voice, mm-hmm. for example. They'll say Joe when I talk, and they'll know it's not my wife. But the what they capture, supposedly, what they say they capture is just what you say about purchasing things.
And you keep saying they say.
Yeah.
And
like he doesn't believe it. I don't know.
No. But I mean, like you did allude to this earlier, that if they weren't doing what they mm-hmm. said they were doing, that people would have ways to figure it out. Like if they were going further mm-hmm. than what they claimed to be going, that there would be ways for people
it
like
you.
It shows up.
I talk to people. The one example of this, it doesn't come out easily, but there was a whistleblower, for example, for Meta,
right.
who mm-hmm. talked about how Meta was basically trying to addict young people in terms of the way they would feed them information right. and reinforce what they got.
This turned into congressional testimony,
yes.
I believe, what you're referring to.
Exactly.
So you believe that there would be sort of cracks in the dam if indeed right. they were going much further than they yeah. said they were going.
But we don't even have to worry about much further. What's happening now is pretty far.
Yeah.
I mean, you
sure.
can...
Sure. When, as I grant say, that, yes.
With your television set, with your phone is a multi-dimensional data collector
yeah.
for mm-hmm. so many companies. Everything you do online within the Google and Meta and Amazon system. Amazon has a huge advertising system, and they collect data all over the place about you.
Hmm.
It's something that we do take for granted. But in the end, what happens is we get categorized. Some people are considered more valuable than other people. You may get discounts, and I'm not. And not only that, I've more and more begun to think that it also helps, it splinters the world,
yeah.
our way of thinking about other people. Because increasingly, we're divided up in so many different ways that we begin to say, to wonder what kind of views.
But you're saying it used to be better when we all got the same beer commercial.
Well, I don't want to say that.
Yeah.
That's a real interesting logical leap, but it's not. I'm not saying that Leave It to Beaver was the answer.
Yeah.
Okay? Monoculture.
But yeah. I am saying that it would be important for us. There are two, broadly speaking, let's talk about two kinds of media. One are society-making media and the other segment-making media. I think we need both.
Yeah.
You need media that help Christians get together in a church, and you need media where we can talk about the Christians in the church to people who don't go to that church.
Right. It's increasingly segmented. And
not just segmented, it's becoming
micro-segmented.
Micro-segmented to the point that we may be disoriented in what people get. You can get a different set of shows, and even down the line, changes in the show. You may think you're watching the same show I am, but you won't.
Which kind of puts these people in their own echo chambers, kind of away, and creates division. By the way, Rebecca comments, nobody or company should be collecting your data without your clear permission. It should be illegal, and they should be fined and lose their licenses if they continue. I want to talk quickly about that Apple lawsuit, and they've sort of, they're planning to pay like $95 million.
That's nothing.
That's nothing to in the average.
Apple,
average
just decided.
The average person would get $20 max per.
$20. You know how much the law firm's getting? $30 million.
And I just want to talk quickly.
Law firm.
If you could explain what they took people's data. Explain exactly what Apple did in this case, or is alleged to have.
Yeah, they're alleged to have listened in to what people were doing when they didn't tell them they were doing it, and they were doing it by supposedly people would. Listen in to snippets of what people were saying, and then presumably they could use it to understand who those people were. But really, Apple was using it to try to make their artificial intelligence better.
Yeah.
But they didn't tell people about it.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the same thing. Vizio got in trouble. Vizio, the television set, was taking data from people without telling them. Every TV set does this, but video people were stupid and they didn't put it in their privacy policy, and they got hammered.
Apple has not admitted to any liability specifically
or wrongdoing
in that case.
They just wanted to throw it away. But there are class action suits all over the place around
and
these
probably
sorts of
more
things.
Coming.
Yeah.
And if this all sounds rather dystopian, Jamie on YouTube agrees. Jamie says, this makes me think of the 1984 Terminator film, where Skynet is this made-up conscious AI that operates like a group mind. It turned our own habits against us to take over. Just a funny thought, or funny to Jamie at least. Let me get in one more caller before the break. Kate from New Jersey is on line 3. We only have about a minute, Kate, but you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
Any person in this country who thinks there's any privacy at all is living in a dream world. 1973, I went to China right after Nixon. It's the biggest communist country in the world. They tapped my phone when I came home. I have had a tapped phone ever since 1973. My husband's brother was a deputy director of the FBI, and we got my file, and yes, they do tap your phone. I asked, when do they stop tapping it? And I was told, they never do, because if the person who tapped it finds out that you do turn out to be a crook, they lose their job, so they just as soon let you coast along. So don't think you have any privacy. Just live a good life. Goodbye.
Interesting.
Wow. Thank you so much, Kate from New Jersey.
Give you a chance to respond to that, actually. Let's push the break back, because what Kate's bringing up is the idea that maybe this is really not that new. So today it might be Meta collecting my data, but before it was J. Edgar Hoover.
Right.
I mean, is this different?
I don't study government.
Sure.
Okay. So that's a different story. But what's different about what's happening now is that the interactive world made all of this stuff real time.
Yeah.
Okay. And the AI world is making it hyper personal.
Yeah.
And that's what it's. Peddlers did this 150 years ago.
Peddlers.
Peddlers would walk through the suburbs, which we call the suburbs of Philly, or out in the Midwest, and they would keep notes about the people they met, because they would charge one family different prices for the same thing they charge another family, and they didn't want to mess it up.
This is a far more sophisticated version.
Exactly. It's not only more sophisticated, it allows you, as I suggested, to get into hundreds of data points about you and make things, even change the content of what you're watching because of generative AI. Yeah.
And so the way it's being used has changed.
It's
totally
different.
By the way, Tracy comments, I no longer believe privacy is possible.
That's one approach to all this. We can talk about that on the other side of the break.
Let's talk about it, because I don't want to be so dim.
And by the way, coming up, we'll also get some practical advice. Hopefully, Joe, you can provide that to people on how to protect your most sensitive data and on what the future of data privacy looks like. We'll talk about all of that. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. Do you think big tech has gone too far in collecting your data, however you want to refer to it? The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the chat. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Studio 2. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. If you're just joining us, we're talking about data privacy online, the shocking amount of information that tech companies collect, and how it's used. Our guest is University of Pennsylvania Professor Joe Turow, who's written several books on the subject. His most recent is The Voice Catchers, How Marketers Listen In to Exploit Your Feelings, Your Privacy, and Your Wallet.
And our question for you, our listeners today, is this. Do you think big tech has gone too far in collecting your data? The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, drop your comments in the live chat. And by the way, I want to read this comment from YouTube from Paul Michael, who says, I have been served ads for items I have never had any interest or interaction with within 48 hours of a related, quote, keyword coming up in a random conversation on my iPhone. They 100% are listening. That's Paul Michael's opinion.
I can totally understand where you're coming from, particularly given my experience.
Yeah.
If it happens, if we can figure that out, that would be amazing.
Yeah. So let's get a couple more comments in here. This is Jan, who emails, I do not have a data plan on purpose and have no apps turned on my iPhone. But if I'm talking to someone who does have these features on their device, am I also spied on despite my best efforts? Let's keep that in mind as we bring in a caller. This is Molly from Cherry Hill on line one, who wants to talk about like what we can do in all of this. Molly, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, Avi, Cherry. Thank you very much. I'm really paranoid. I'm like Jan. I have a dumb TV, you know, very few apps, et cetera. And I only once ever, a couple of years ago, had a realtor take my information so that I was interested in selling my house. And that was the only person. I know she sold my data because all of a sudden of the last few months, I've been getting text messages from people asking, hey, do you want to sell your house? So, you know, like I said, I'm paranoid, and just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you, right? So my question is, I want to know what we can do to protect ourselves. I turn my mobile off if I'm outside of my house.
Yeah. All right. So Molly from Cherry Hill, kind of a similar to the email, like you have a couple people who've tried to, let's not say get off the grid, but try to shut down or slow the channels of information collection. And I think the question is, does that work at all? And are there more effective or less effective ways to do it?
It's a really complicated question. If you really wanted to shut everything off, it would work.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go into a store and you don't use a credit card, don't use your frequent shopper card, don't turn your phone on, okay? You could do all of that and you'll pay 20% more. Okay,
wow.
People who use frequent shopper cards get discounts, and that the stores know this, right? They collect. This is a very interesting story, but one of the most fascinating inventions of the 20th century was the barcode. Boop, you know. And originally, it goes back. It was invented at Drexel University by some graduate students in 1948.
Wow.
It wasn't until the 1970s that it actually was used during an inflation period where stores wanted to be able to know what people were buying without tagging every piece of goods. But in the 2000s, they began to realize that they could actually use those data to make sense about us. And and to give you discounts based upon that and to sell your data. Kroger's, the big supermarket chain, now sells you as you go through the store.
Yeah.
They sell you on television. They have a TV-related marketplace that they connect to. They have a whole lot of ways to get to sell the people that they deal with.
But just to summarize, what you're saying is you could do it, but you'd have to think about a lot of different nodes of interaction in your life, like a lot.
And not only that, you'd lose by it if you're willing to give up. And we find that what happens is Americans are resigned to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad.
Sure. We got comments
found that over 55-60% and more of Americans in a number of different studies say, I'd rather companies, you know, I'd rather them not look at my, follow me, but I've come to believe that I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And that's resignation.
By the way, we got an email from Matthew who says, I like Yang's suggestion that we should all be paid for this use of our data. If our data runs the world, why shouldn't we get a cut?
That's Andrew Yang, I guess?
I'm assuming.
Right, Andrew Yang has said that. That's a whole different attitude. I don't espouse it. Because what that, taken logically...
That's the white flag method. Let's just get a cut.
Every part of your life,
you don't realize emotions now are being used to tag you.
Mm-hmm.
So demographics, locations, emotions, and areas. I've spoken to people like in the New York Times where it's a black box. They try to figure out why the AI says you're like you are.
By the way, I got to bring this caller in because it's a very interesting comment they have. Jen from Merkinville, New Jersey is on the line. Jen, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you for taking me. I am a very white woman interested in social and racial justice. So AI understands me to be black, which is really, really interesting. I don't know when that turning point happened.
And how do you know this, by the way?
Because I get black hair products. I get all kinds of apparel with kente cloth. Just very specific product advertising is being sold to me. So I actually kind of like to fool it.
Mm-hmm.
When I can. It kind of got me experimenting with different ways I can fool it.
That's an attitude people
that?
Have.
Can you do that?
You can do that if you have to be really good at it. And of course, what that means is you're going to get different things you may or may not feel you like, you know, based upon who you represent. That is a way to do it. People try to upend the artificial intelligence, to upend the kinds of things that people are looking at. For a long time, and maybe it's still true, Facebook said I was Hispanic. I have no idea why.
Hmm.
I don't care.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
I do have a question because I want to, is there a way to sort of, we talked about, you know, trying to protect your data. I mean, because clearly they can get it wrong, right? Are there any ways to protect your data without having to read those thousands of words in the privacy policy and go through each and every app and tailor every single privacy
the best I would say two things. I'd say disagree with anything, go in and decline. More and more we have that choice. Okay, they'll probably say agree and then it'll say find out more or something like that. Sometimes you can say decline and do it. Constantly do that. Okay, go into your TV set. It'll take a while, but figure out how to say don't track me. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Try to do this and get your kids to learn about it. That's one thing. The other thing is political action. I mean, when you have an opportunity to talk to people in political power, local representatives or others, make this a priority. Okay. Tell them that this is something that really bothers you.
And quick follow up, because I get all these emails sometimes and letters about hacking. And that should we be concerned about this? And
Yes. Is
that even another reason to be more protective of your data when these companies are getting hacked and your Social Security number could end up on
the black
web?
Very good point. Yes. And I have, for many reasons, not given data to companies. You know what I've also used? Do you know of something called a virtual credit card? Mm-hmm. A virtual credit card, many credit card companies have this, where when you're buying something online, instead of using your credit card number, it has an ability to link up your credit card to a make-believe number, a token, basically, that it uses. And the good thing about that is that even if they get hacked, all they're going to see is that make-believe credit card number.
Yeah.
The other thing about it is, let's say you have a subscription to something, normally you'll forget and they keep renewing it. If you use a virtual credit card, it automatically sunsets after, say, 6 months, 2 months, whatever you set it at. So they can't keep using your card over and over again.
Look into
the virtual credit card.
Let me read in some comments because we have some great ones. This is Artist Not Not on YouTube, who says, part of the issue and where this began is that the U.S. government normalized the lack of privacy after 9/11. It was an expectation, and we traded privacy for security. Bad trade-off, in my opinion. And anything that's free, you are the product.
Underscore that.
Joe says, in my experience, part of the way big tech wins with regards to privacy is by abstracting their products away to the point of magic. Let us worry about how it works. I firmly believe that technical education of the public in a way the public can understand is the key to data autonomy. And finally, Jeremy says, I am a data tech professional familiar with data gathering and advertising techniques. I try to balance my data privacy with app functionality. My input, many of my accounts are shared with my wife and kids who do not manage their privacy as I do. Family accounts are one of the ways our data gets gotten, even when we try to limit it. But let me rewind to Andrew Yang, good old Andrew Yang, because I want to contend with this idea that Matthew brings up. That I think what it's getting at is the idea that there's just really nothing we can do. And we might as well get a piece of the pie while we still can as consumers and not be as exploited, because we are headed in this direction. We are going 60 miles an hour down this freeway and there is no stopping it. I want you to contend with that.
Yeah, I think that that is a very dangerous approach, because that once you do this, first of all, how do you know the amount of money you're going to get compared to the amount of companies you're going to use and the kinds of categories they will have about you is going to be far greater than what you get for it. I think you'll find that companies will construct ideas about you that you might be very... your friends may be more valuable than you
but
are.
But this all hinges on the idea that we can stop it. I mean, so how can we stop it then? Like, what is the law or what is the set of laws that actually limits all of this?
As I said, I think we could keep trying to find ways they don't track me, okay? We should push European-like laws, but real ones. The Europeans, if you say in Europe you're allowed to use my data, they can use it. Opt-in sounds great, but most people don't know what they're opting in for.
Yeah.
So the first thing I say, and I don't always push this idea, is we do have to have better education.
Mm-hmm.
I have students in my intro classes at Penn who never learned a bit about this in high school. They simply didn't learn anything.
Sure. Yeah.
And partly because their teachers don't know. Secondly, I really do believe that if people in power, in the government level, feel that the public is really angry about this, they can do something about it.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened. The we don't have a national privacy law for a variety of reasons we can go into. California has a great set of laws, not perfect, but better than anything the federal government has. And it scares some companies that are acting a little bit better because of California's laws.
Yeah.
But I just to simply give up our data...
Yeah.
I think is a bit...
And I don't want to say that, but that's what Matthew was saying. I was just sort of using that as a leaping off
I mean,
point.
It's a legitimate way of thinking.
Sure.
It's just that I don't see that ending very well.
Yeah. I want to bring in a caller because we only have a few more minutes in this. We have Ellie from Elkins Park. Ellie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My comment is, you know, I'm not very well-read on the matter, but from what I can tell, all these technologies could be really wonderful. You got stuff tracking you, what you need, who you need to talk to, what you need to talk about. They could all be really great. I'm not as concerned with privacy as I was when I was younger and I thought I was an edgy young guy or whatever. But you know, with these companies, all they care about is profit, of course, as companies do. And so it's grown rampant in this way, or so it seems to me. But in terms of going too far, it didn't have to be.
Yeah.
I like what we can do with these awesome tools.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Alec.
I agree that there are a lot of things. I could not live without Google today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
And there are a lot of things that these companies do terrifically well. But there has to be a balance.
Yeah.
And we have to be able to say, I think it's an issue of dignity. I think it's an issue of discrimination. Okay, some people getting discriminated where other people aren't. And I do think that as we move forward, it's an issue of social fragmentation and the extent to which, you know, we're talking now about today's world. Do you know when the commercial internet started? 1994.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say
this is a tiny bit of time. Mm-hmm. Extrapolate what we're talking down to your grandchildren.
Yeah.
Or to your great-grand. This is the
it's
beginning.
It's already moved so fast.
Yeah. That's my point.
Yeah, I see what you're
saying. And do we really, you know, do we want to just allow it, this train in an endless spiral of data gathering?
And in just 30 seconds as we wrap up, if you were in charge, what would you do to ensure a better future when it comes to data privacy?
I would work on creating a strict national law that allows people serious control over their data. And I would also, and I've been thinking about this, I would allow people, encourage people to be able to choose whom they want to be.
Mm.
Now, this is weird, but I'm thinking of putting it into my book. Let's say you want to be a policeman for a day,
mm-hmm.
or somebody who's 58 years old. How would Google approach you? And learn about that.
Like sort of internet role playing. I like that. Okay, that's Joe Turo,
yes.
From the University of Pennsylvania. Most recent book is The Voice Catchers, How Marketers Listen In to Exploit Your Feelings, Your Privacy, and Your Wallet. It was a pleasure to have you in studio.
Great to see you guys.
Yes, and thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige, Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer, Al Banks, and Paul Parmalee engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thank you for joining us. We will talk to you tomorrow.